Evening one, and oh, yeah, halfway through another week, halfway through another month, and here we are with another book and a chat on New Visions Radio with me, Barry. Well, I was born in the early 50s, and growing up in the 50s in England, especially after the war, my parents, in the early days of actually having a television, my eldest sister, well, she's younger than me, but the eldest of my two sisters and I, my parents sat us down every week to watch World at War, which was basically, obviously, it's still very much in people's minds and the black and white newsreels and everything like that. So we were raised not, you know, so that we would have some aspect of knowledge about it, about the concentration camps and everything like that. And what had gone on before? What had gone on with the burning of the books? What had gone on with the concentration camps and stuff like that? Now, we've done a few shows on over the last sort of dozen years or so about book banning and everything like that. But it's not going away. It's getting worse. And in the last few years, we've seen that. My guest is telling me she totally agrees with me. But it is, and she has used her own growing up experience to sort of compare, or in stories sort of thing, about this, about the sort of things that perhaps, you know, she grew up knowing a bit about, or it was relevant to her, and how it is getting like it today. Anyway, we better find out a bit more, haven't we? Because on the show today, I have the one and only Stacia Moffitt. Hi, Stacia. How are you doing?
Hi there, Barry. I'm doing fine.
I'm glad. I heard you say you were agreeing with all I was saying, which is great. I'm glad of that. Because, I mean, you didn't initially set out. I mean, even though, you know, you're growing up, you have books and pictures and stuff like that, we're sort of reading and everything. And I see, by the way, you were a favorite. Winnie the Pooh was one of your favorites. Well, I can tell
you. Oh, yes, it certainly was.
I can tell you, I used to live, before coming to America, I used to live within 10 miles of the 100-acre wood.
Oh, really?
it's more like a 10-acre wood nowadays. But the bridge where they played poo sticks is there. You can go there and throw your own bit of wood over the bridge and stuff like that. So, yeah. But you were a biologist, weren't you? Or an oceanographer, that sort of thing. And you studied that. But something made you want to write and sort of go through this. What pushed you to write? Two books in this series now.
Right. I began to compare the time when I was growing up and the attitudes of people with what was happening currently. And it was so chilling to me to see that. We worked so hard, you know, with the civil rights movement to try to change the country and to make it a more equitable place to live. But a lot of that is being reversed now. And I think that people need to be informed of what it was like in this country. I think maybe if they can see it that way, they will recognize it in the current trends and changes that are taking place. And so that's why I thought that picturing it back in the 1950s, people can look at it with clear eyes and see what's going on, and then maybe they will start thinking. And that's what I hope.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'd love to agree with you, but unfortunately, my experience in living in America, and, you know, I'm talking as a non-American, but I've been here quite a few years. I can tell you now, for instance, that the term USA is hardly used in the rest of the world, because the states haven't been united for some time. people
That's true.
people just don't realize what the rest of the world thinks about America these days. And
It's very disunited.
it very I mean, people just say things and call names. It's like being at kindergarten, the way they call each other names and stuff like
Yes,
that.
yes. What's going on right now? It's just awful.
It is. And yeah, that's why I said about being brought up to see how bad it was in Germany, to see what happened. And I'm sitting reading the news and thinking, that's what happened in Germany in the 40s and 50s. The sorry, 30s and
That's
40s.
exactly.
And it's the same thing, the same people, the same propaganda, the same blinkers, if you want. And down to what we started on, saying the book banning of books. I mean, people don't
Yes.
realize there's some of the books that are banned is are just. I mean, there's always been things like Catcher in the Rye and stuff like that, but there are books that are harmless, harmless, and they're being banned. I can tell. I know. Just want to sort of use this as an example, because when I did this program, I had a couple of several authors who'd had their books banned, their YA books banned. One was I forgot what it was now, but it became a bestseller. But it was about cutting, self-harming, and it was banned, but it became a bestseller, which seems to be like in the records. If you got your record banned by the BBC, it became number one. It's just like
Yeah,
that.
well, I have been told by my relatives that the second of the two books will be banned in Tennessee, and they make no bones about it. They say this will never be in the school system's library,
Because,
because it's too woke.
yeah, exactly. I know. It's like somebody said to me the other day about TikTok. I said, the nearest thing I come to TikTok is the crocodile in Peter Pan. That was it. But they went to, like you're saying about the workbook, a part of Texas. This was 8 year ago, something like that. And we had this program with all these authors came on explaining about their books being banned and stuff like that. And 70,000 children were banned from reading The Diary of Anne Frank, which was part of their literary syllabus, because one family said the Holocaust didn't happen.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah, that kind of thing.
that's how that's such a side of thing. Now, when you wrote Missing Girl and then Jessa Is Back, the sort of two books in the was it Lost and Found in Tennessee, you obviously use your growing up in Tennessee and the experience of what was going on in the 50s and stuff like that. But you also incorporated like a self-sufficiency, because I know that's sort of almost off the grid top sort of level with you.
Right. Well, we personally are pretty much pioneers ourselves in a wild canyon in West Eastern Washington, but we've always been interested in gardening and producing our own food and that kind of thing because we like the quality of it, and it's just a better way to live, and that got incorporated in the book because I like to challenge a character and see what she can do, and that's sort of what I did with the it's about the first half of The Missing Girl. She's out on her own trying to survive grubbing food from her grandfather's garden and that kind of thing because she's scared stiff to go back to the town. They're looking for her, and they want to send her to foster care because of her parents' demise. And she has a special view of foster care because her father was abused as a child. He was also an orphan, and so she is getting along on her own until the weather pretty much closes in on her. And I think that was good to challenge her, and she grew as a person, getting more self-reliant as a result. But then she has to go back and face the fact that she disrupted her town by running away, and they began to turn against the blacks
Oh.
as a scapegoat phenomenon. And that is just so typical
Yep.
of the way people will interpret any event
Well, it's
in
like we've
and
just seen with the eating cats and dogs. Yeah. It's just
Well,
like it. Just like
right,
it,
absolutely.
yeah. Now the book, the theme on the book, there is obviously there is this racial undertone, there is the resilience of the girl. Interestingly, she's a single child, but her parents got a dog, so she'd have the equivalent of a sister, which I think is a wonderful thing there.
Yes.
Is that anything that did you have was how were animals in your early life? Were they important to
Oh,
you?
I grew up with dogs. I always had dogs. When I was a baby, there was the farm dog that slept under the house where my cradle was.
Oh,
So
really?
I've been cared for by dogs ever since.
Wow. Because it's interesting. I was funny enough, I was talking to my mother today. She's 96 and still as sharp as a tack. But I was talking to her today, and we were talking about two of my nieces are pregnant, both due around sort of March, same time. We're talking about how many sort of months they have off paternity. One's the first baby, and the other one's the second baby, and the difference and stuff. Anyway, we're talking about I think it's Denmark, where they get
Yes.
like 2 years or something off there, and the husband
Both
gets
parents.
both parents
Yes.
exactly. I mean, it's not just that. Also, if a pet dies, you get time off for grieving for your pet dying, which to some
I didn't
people.
know that.
Yeah, but
Yes.
as you just said, to some people, that is a member of the family. Because my mother was saying that
Absolutely.
my great great niece spoke to her and said, some of my friends think it's funny that you give presents to the pets. And I said, well, we've always done that. We've always at Christmas given a little. I mean, they're part of the family. You know, you
Sure,
wouldn't
they
miss
are,
out.
and they can celebrate too.
Exactly. So I think, I've known, I worked with a person who couldn't work for a week after his dog died. It affected
Yeah.
him so much because it was his family and that. But it just shows you, just using it as an example, just shows you the sort of how a pet can become, how it does take the place of a sibling quite often.
Yes, it does. And in Jess's case, it was very, very important to have that dog with her. I don't think she could have made it without it, the
Right,
dog.
right.
And also she talks to her. And so that
That
gives me a
helps.
dialogue.
Yeah, I was going to say that helps with the book. Mind you, my
Yes.
wife will tell you that I talk to the dog more and I talk to her. But that's another story. It's a two book series so far. Lost and Found in Tennessee is and it's like a historical thing because, as we said, it brings up the history and the relation, the race thing, and things like that. The very first one is The Missing Girl, and that's where she's off and basically becoming self-sufficient at old farms or wherever. She's done that, and you've obviously been able to utilize your own experiences and bring up the fact that what was you sort of re remember from growing up in the 50s and what happened within that area in Tennessee. And I know I read somewhere, because this is a big thing that we have on the show, that no matter how we plot these books, how we plot out the whole thing, what's going to happen, the characters lead us. We have no say in the
Oh
matter.
yes, absolutely. I didn't do the plotting. I didn't plan anything. I just invited the characters in, and they were
Exactly.
sufficient to carry the story
Yep. I mean,
forward. It just
That's
They all
exactly.
had something to say too, that everyone is in there for a reason.
Yeah, and it's funny because people say about writer's block. I'm sorry, it's not writer's block. You didn't listen to the characters the day before, and now they've
Right.
got the hump, and they won't talk to you again. I mean,
Yeah.
but
You have to listen.
you do. We have no say in it, do we? I mean, I've had people. I've had a lady who. She'd got like about 20 historical romance books out or something like that, and she, we were talking about this with her latest book about the characters leading you and everything, and she was saying, "That's right," she said. She tried to kill this character off 6 times. The character wouldn't die. She had to go back and rewrite the whole plot. She said.
Yes, I can believe it.
When you came to the characters. Subconsciously, it sort of they sort of relate, I'm sure, in some ways to things people from your past, even though they have their own voice. Did you find that when you started off the thing that what you thought the story was going to be, it sort of had two different twists and turns where these characters took you down these alleyways?
Well, definitely. I started with the survival aspect of it, just a sort of a daydream of what could be possible. But then I began to get involved with the characters in the town, and I saw what was happening in the town, and that was what led me into the dealing with the racial issues, white supremacy, the whole idea that things could be banned. I didn't that, but the idea of keeping people separate, that was just devastating to me when I realized how much of my childhood had been dominated by this inability to get to know half of the population in my town. And that robs everybody. I know it's much, much worse if your skin is brown. You have so many problems, but it's bad for everybody. And I think that whites need to recognize that.
So much so. I mean, and it's changed. Well, not so much in America, but even though it has, but in England, for instance, in my junior school, which would have been 50s, early 60s, we had one coloured person in the whole of my junior school. Until obviously the 60s, we got a huge amount of West Indians came across to England. The whole sort of transfer across from various, Jamaica and stuff like that, because it's Commonwealth, it's people came. And now, it's a complete melting pot with the Eastern Blocs and obviously all the Commonwealth countries and everything like that. It's taken so matter of a fact these days. You don't notice. You don't sort of. I was watching a soccer game last night, and I'm looking at the people, and I'm thinking, well, basically half this team are sort of lighter shade of brown. It's just a mix of everything. Everybody's becoming a sort of standard thing, and it is. But there are still people. There are still people because perhaps of how they were brought up, because of how they live, that think this is all wrong. That this is wrong, and that people shouldn't have this. We shouldn't do this. We shouldn't. These are the ones to blame for everything, and that. And unfortunately, the sort of powers that be in America, they bring it up time and time again. So I can
What
see
we're
why you
facing.
wrote it. I can see why you wrote it, shall I say? The second book in the series, Cassie's the dog, isn't it? Cassie's the dog. I had to try and think of the dog's name. Which is Jessa is back. Does that sort of carry on from the first? Where do you go to on the in the historical era with Jessa is back?
Jessa was the daughter of a man who was interested in music. And when her father was killed, she realized that he had some very unfinished business with the school board. He had been trying to get music into the black school. One black school, three white schools. And they had hired somebody, and he had been assigned just to the white schools.
Right.
So her father, she knew, was going to try to point out to them, based upon the laws that they were going by, which was separate but equal, that they were not treating the black kids equally.
Right.
And so she was going to try to further that process. And she met with the school board. She got rebuffed completely. And town had begun to have music in the park. And so she was very interested in getting some of the black musicians into that.
Right.
And that was some of her idea that she could collect a donations from people, pass
right.
the plate, like they do in church,
right.
and collect money to support the black schools, because the school board had said, yeah, we don't have the money. We can't do it because we don't have the money. And so she was going to address that question, and not really realizing what the real problem was, which is this discrimination. And so people in the town, various characters in the town, are either supporting her or lining up against what she's trying to do. And there's some confrontations. And so it's the more hard-striking book that argues for integration, letting people be friends, letting people break down these barriers, which are stupid,
right?
And just the stupidity of that segregation,
yeah.
Which
yeah.
you know we're going back into that same kind of pattern right in that
we
right
certainly
away.
Are. We certainly are. Yeah.
The school systems in the South are pretty abysmal, and they're being made worse by all of the separation into Christian schools and pulling kids out and saying they can't be taught this and that, or they must have the Ten Commandments
yep.
and the Lord's Prayer every day and that kind of thing. The country was founded on separation of church and state, and that is just not being upheld.
Yeah, obviously I sort of was around for a lot of the apartheid in South Africa, which is like a more modern day. Separate, segregation and everything like that. Now you wouldn't even know it was there, but in America, it still seems to be inbred in certain areas. I sort of talk to people and all the time said, oh no, they wouldn't do that. They wouldn't do that. Yes, they do do it. Yes, you do.
Yeah.
Yes, you still see
yes,
it.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, I mean, and it's. I don't know. There's a lot of things going on in this country that is beyond my comprehension.
Mine also.
Yeah, I mean, it's nothing I grew up with. It's nothing that I'm mentally able to understand. And every day I just look at the headlines, or go to the BBC normally to get the news rather than something else. And I just shake my head and I start off saying something. My wife said, yeah, you're talking to the choir. I know what you're saying. You know, it is that. But you've got the two books here now. Are you going to... Oh, I've lost the thing. Oh. Well, there you go. We're gonna try and get through to her again, because I was just about to say... And the line dropped. Well, that was interesting.
Oh, I did that.
You did it.
I had an incoming.
Ah, okay. we're nearly sort of there anyway at the end. But you sort of see the stuff and you hear the stuff. And I say, I don't understand. It's like trying to work out infinity. Our brain can't take it. It's beyond our brain.
Right.
You've got the two stories so far. Are you going to do another one in the series?
If there's another one done, it will be with Jessa and the girlfriend that she made in Portland, Oregon. Between the two books, there's a six-month stay in which she travels with her relatives to Oregon, and she has the opportunity to make a friend. The friend makes the first initiative. And this is a black girl, and she realizes when she goes back to Tennessee for her custody hearings, she realizes that she would not be able to ride in the bus in downtown Nashville with this girl. They couldn't go to the same restaurants. They could not even go to the same restroom or drink in the same water fountains. It's just so segregated. And she begins that's part of her maturation. She comes back prepared to try to change the system that is so unfair.
Right, indeed. Well, time is beating us. So, Stacia, I'm going to hand the show over to you now so you can tell everybody where people can find more about you and your books. So, over to you.
Okay, thank you. There is a website, and it's easy to remember. It's all written lowercase, lostandfoundintennessee.com. And there you can purchase either of the books or the two-book set, and I recommend the two-book set because they really do go together and need
banned.
To be read
yeah,
together.
Right. Before it's banned.
Yes.
Go on, sorry. I was so sorry. It's going to be worth money because it will be banned soon, so get it before it's banned.
Yes, that would be my recommendation, especially if you live in Tennessee or in the South.
Yep.
Please make an effort. Go to the website. It's up and running, and you can pre-order through Amazon. Or you can go ahead and pay with a credit card, but it's possible to send an order through now. And I would very much like for people in the South to read these books and talk about them. Right. I want mothers and daughters to be reading these books. The pictures on the front make them look like a child's book, maybe, or a preteen. They are dealing with material that I would very much like the preteens to be exposed to.
Right, indeed.
But it's definitely adult literature as well.
Right.
These are historical novels.
Indeed.
And they're simply written from the vantage point of a girl who didn't see it until it was in her face, and then she began to fight against it.
Well,
the whole segregation mess.
Stacia, it's been a pleasure chatting to you. Hopefully, it will help one person. It will be worthwhile, and I'm sure it's going to help a lot of people. So thank you very much for being a guest on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
And, my pleasure.
Lost and Found in Tennessee. I'm looking forward to having a good readership.
There you go. Well, there you go. My guest today. Stacia Moffitt. That's Stacia. Stacia Moffitt. And we've been talking about her series, Lost and Found in Tennessee, a pair of historical fiction books about in the Deep South in the 50s and stuff like that. Very, very interesting. And as she says, if one teen can read it and learn from it, it's going to be it. Anyway, that's it. I'll be back on Sunday with my two music shows. First off, those were the days. Music from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern. Music from the 20th century. And the theme is the second week with a theme of letters, writing, etc. And then after that, from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, we have the Swinging 60s. Music from the 60s, not just the British invasion, but anything from that. And then next week, I'll be back with two more guests here chatting. So until then, as always, we have one thing left to say. Don't forget.